save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We're either selling Cadillacs or welcoming back a fine guest, a friend of ours, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Jim, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates.
Mike, Dom, good to be with you, especially since today we're beginning to observe the four-year anniversary of the beginning of President Trump's attempts to obstruct justice in the Russia investigation beginning in March of 2017. It didn't go well after this, as we all know.
That won't fit on the cover of the card, Jim, but thanks for the update, man.
Jim, how many,
seems like a long time.
How many days since the Mueller report dropped, Jim? You still counting days?
I've stopped calculating, but I do have the Mueller report right here just in case we have questions. Yeah. Always at the ready.
Dom sleeps with the pistol and Jim sleeps with the Mueller report. Jim, let's talk about the arrest apparently related to the death of Officer Sicknick, U.S. Capitol. Jim, were you surprised? Merrick Garland, still just 4 days on the job as the Attorney General of the United States, and charges coming down, perhaps not murder, Jim, but could we anticipate some other charges of that sort in the future?
Absolutely. And again, not a surprise, because plainly, I have to believe that this investigation of the death, the murder of Officer Sicknick, was probably at the top of the list of law enforcement, local, state, and federal. And so the fact that the Attorney General, the new Attorney General Merrick Garland, announcing this today comes in the wake of plainly every single day, every single hour since January 6th, this being the focus of law enforcement attention. We've got two people, George Pierre Tanios, West Virginia, and Julian Illy Cater of Pennsylvania, both of whom are charged, interestingly, today with assaulting officers. And this comes in connection with plainly their use of something called bear spray. And to your question, your very good question, Mike, anticipate fully that this particular charge will be enhanced as the medical examiner and other medical information comes in about the exact cause of death of Officer Sicknick, which was always thought to be related to this, but probably increased to a murder charge very soon. The fact that they're both in custody is one of the most significant things that comes in the wake of the January 6th assault on our Capitol.
Jim, do you anticipate some sort of federal charges on conspiracy? We understand there's been at least two Proud Boys that have been arrested. Both of them offered security to Roger Stone at the rally prior to the marching on the U.S. Capitol. The Proud Boys obviously demonstrated some sort of almost military-like discipline in some of their actions that day, and there seemingly was some coordination. They even did like pincer movements on the building, entering at differing points. Jim, that certainly seems like a conspiracy to me. Do you envision conspiracy charges, and could there be perhaps even Republican House members caught up in those charges?
Very much so. And again, you've got the legal underpinnings of this just right, Professor Kroot, and with respect to what a conspiracy is all about, an agreement basically among people. It's got to be more than one. You can't conspire with yourself, but more than one person to engage in a criminal act, and pursuant to that mission, that purpose, you have to engage in an overt act in furtherance of it. Could be very small, could be buying a telephone, could be reaching out on a telephone conversation. And so we've got lots of different tendrils, as your question just indicates. Recall we had this account of people standing at the Iwo Jima Memorial across the river, Potomac River in Virginia, monitoring things. We had the things you just referenced. And plainly, we know that the FBI is also looking at telephone toll records of, yes, that's right, sitting members of Congress to determine what kinds of communications they may have had with some of the rioters before, during, and even after the assault on the Capitol. All of that suggesting that the breadth of this investigation is very broad, and that lots of people were in fact coordinating it, which is perhaps the best way of understanding what conspiracy is all about. I get together with other people, not just randomly showing up, but quite literally putting together a scheme, a practice, an artifice, if you will, to attack the Capitol, to do what they intended to do. Many tendrils, but many of them connected. Absolutely envision more conspiracy charges coming, potentially of sitting governmental individuals, in addition to individuals who have already been charged, state, local, and federal, for their individual acts on that day.
Jim, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson said, you know, effectively, these aren't armed insurrectionists, because he asked somebody and nobody had a gun. That's not my understanding, Jim. There were quite a few armaments and some bombs and some bullets and guns, et cetera, that were taken from insurrectionists at the U.S. Capitol. I know that Ron Johnson's trying to reshape the narrative after the fact here, Ron, but can you dispel that?
Absolutely. And again, this is one of those situations where the word binary, way overused in Washington, should not be applied. This is not a situation where we've got two different versions of the facts. We know these things with absolute clarity. We see it on the videotapes. We've seen it on the confirmed documents that have been filed in connections with indictments and charges brought against individuals. This was a violent act. Firearms present on the property of the Capitol? Absolutely. Those bombs they did not go off at the DNC and the RNC, just blocks from the United States Capitol. Plainly, this is a violent act. And with respect to the senator, he is simply wrong. And he knows that. And it's inaccurate. And I would offer to you and to your listeners something that I suspect you already embrace, which is it is contrary to the best interests of our nation to continue to articulate these views that are simply unsupported by the known facts. And he's got to stop doing that. It's not helpful. And in fact, it's to the contrary. It is affirmatively destructive to our understanding of what happened that day and to ensure not only that justice is done with respect to those people who did in fact attack our democracy, try to stop the operation of government, but also as we go forward to ensure that it doesn't happen again. If we deny the past as he is doing, we are also making it much more difficult to ensure that our safety and security is not protected as we go forward. It's reckless, it's irresponsible, and that kind of language should be condemned.
James Hentel, former U.S. attorney, our fine guest. Jim, the distinction, perhaps a gun. In a federal charge, would you have to show up with a gun to be considered armed? If I showed up with a baseball bat, if I showed up even with a crutch or a hockey stick or, you know, used fencing for bicycles and threw it at a cop, would I be deemed armed under federal statute when it came time to charge?
Yes. If I would reach back beyond my Mueller report, I will tell you that I have just at the ready here the criminal code, which is a very thick book, also thicker than the Mueller report. Plainly, when it comes to firearms, there are a very great number of specific kinds of offenses related to not only manufacture, transportation, sale, use, carry, all those kinds of things that can apply specifically to what we think about firearms, specifically defined. But the federal code, and as does most state codes and even local ordinances, also prohibit various uses of the mechanisms, the materials of violence. And the mere fact that I don't have a gun doesn't mean that I have not committed a federal or state offense when it comes to assaulting other people, attacking the physical property of the United States Capitol. Many, many possibilities for charges based upon the kind of conduct. We know that already federal, state, local authorities have charged more than 300 people, 500 investigations, files are open right now. The conspiracy charges are coming. Today's charges, just more of those, perhaps the most serious, but many, many opportunities here under the codes of state, federal, and local authorities to charge people for their various kinds of events that happened on January 6th.
Jim, pardon me, I want to get your sense on the Sicknick killing, the murder of the officer, the Capitol Police officer. The two people are arrested. My understanding, they have not yet released the autopsy results, Jim. And, you know, we're talking close to 10 weeks. I find it hard to believe they wouldn't have the results. What's your sense on perhaps is if it's not done, why isn't done? And how would that get released to the public and how it would impact this case?
Sure, it's a great question, and we can speculate on it, but we can speculate with some certainty about it. Undeniably, obviously, Brian Sicknick has been dead, most regrettably, horrifically, since January 6th, and we know that. And so the medical authorities have certainly done their job. They've done the analysis of his body, and they have come to conclusions about the reasons for his death. Every indication is that he probably ingested this absolutely lethal amount of what's being called this bear spray that others were also affected by. But we don't know that with certainty. What I think happened here, to answer your question, is that once he identified these two, Tanios and Cater, and again, noting that in many ways they were identified by people around them, friends, family, who saw their pictures, they responded to FBI posters, or called the FBI and said, hey, I know who these folks are. So again, that effort continues. They wanted to bring them into custody as soon as possible. You do not leave people out there who have engaged in this kind of activity. You charge them right now with what you know, which is we know that they attacked Officer Sicknick and others with this bear spray. My full anticipation is that when all of this is put together, after they're in custody, they will almost certainly, I would certainly hope they would be detained by magistrates pre-trial until the time that they are charged, and then certainly after that as well by a grand jury. When all of that is put together in the context of the formal criminal complaint, which is certainly going to be forthcoming, and almost certainly an indictment by a grand jury, all of that information, including the results of the medical examiner and the medical authorities, that will be incorporated then. Law enforcement has that already. It has not yet been disclosed, principally because of these procedural reasons, to get them into custody now and ensure that they do not continue to be a threat to our community.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, joining us. Jim, always a pleasure, man. Before we get to Trump's problems in New York State and in Georgia, I want to get your sense of these lawsuits brought by, Benny Thompson, along with the NAACP, and also new one, Congressman Eric Swalwell, also jumping into the mix here. Jim, what's your sense on those, and how do you think timing will play out? When do you think we'd see some movement on these?
Sure. I'll answer the second one first, which is that these are civil lawsuits. And again, unlike criminal cases where you have speedy trial acts and obligations under the statutory law and frankly, constitutional law also to get those cases resolved, these civil actions against the president, including the most recent ones filed by the congressman, and again, at least two civil lawsuits that we know about, those will take probably years. And so no quick disposition on those. But as we have talked before, the significance of civil cases, again, Congressman Thompson indicating that he filed this principally because the former president was not convicted by the United States Senate on that impeachment charge by the House of Representatives. This is his way to respond to that. Eric Swalwell saying much the same things in his sort of parallel case. The difference there and the reason why it's significant is you do get civil discovery. And judges have said, the Supreme Court has said, certainly now that the former president is no longer the president, and even while he was the president, did not have immunity from those cases going forward. And yes, discovery means what? Testimony in depositions. And unlike the criminal cases, where again, we do not compel a criminal defendant to testify against himself or herself, in the civil cases, you can pursue depositions. You can still bring forth your Fifth Amendment right and decline to do that. But as we've discussed before, when you do that, an inference in the opposite direction can be made. And so we've got this opportunity now in the civil case, even if it doesn't see the light of trial day for a number of years, lots of discovery can be had about who did what, when, and not all of that in the public domain, but certainly it's not subject to grand jury prohibitions on disclosure that we have in the criminal case.
Jim, you're going to stick around for another segment with us? Okay, great. In the last 2 minutes we have here, I just want to get your sense. We haven't really had press conferences, information released from the government with regards to updates on where we stand with the insurrection. It's been a very long time since someone got in front of the mic and updated us. What's your sense? Is this something that the new AG is going to do? Are you satisfied, Jim, with the communication we've gotten in this regard? What are your thoughts?
Right. You know, we know that, and your listeners know that because we're people who focus on this, and we've got notes and all sorts of papers here that indicate to us that we keep inventories of these things. I share not so much your concern, but your anticipation, if you will, that the new attorney general would do this for two reasons. One is it does help us to summarize this notion that, yes, indeed, there are 300 people out of that, maybe 800 more or so, who assaulted the Capitol. And it also gives us confidence of what's happening. The fact that we've got a new attorney general, I would anticipate that either he or his deputy, as she is confirmed, Lisa Monaco, others would come in and provide us with more information on a regular basis. It also sends that all-important message to the American population that we are, in fact, on top of this, we're prosecuting, and it sends a message to the three percenters and the Proud Boys and the others that, you know what, you won't get away with this. And more of your members are going to jail, you're being detained, you're being indicted, and you're going to prison for long periods of time. All those things are important public interests.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Our fine guest, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Did you roll up in a caddy, or was that just Come back with us, Jim. Stunned. I would even have to ask such a question. Limousine, of course. More Devil's Advocates on the other side.
Will there be a lawsuit? Yeah, probably.
The Devil's Advocates. Political commentary from the back of the class.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. If you miss any of this fine program, please go online to domandcrute.com. You can listen to and download podcasts and interviews.
Dominic, we got a fine guest. He stuck around. We appreciate it. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, our friend. Jim, so come on, man. I'm looking for indictments. When are they going to happen? Georgia first or New York first? New York seems like the tax case for Trump. That would be very complicated stuff. We know that the former fixer has been brought in for a seventh or perhaps an eighth interview with the FBI and the Department of Justice. He is encouraging Weisselman, the former chief financial officer of the Trump organization, to turn state's evidence. And one suspects he's up to his own eyebrows. But here's the question. Jim, this case in Georgia seems easier to make. Lordy, there's tapes, Jim. Although I see the Washington Post had to make a slight correction and retraction from the newest tape. It still seems quite damning of the former president, sir. Oh, where's Jim? Hold on, Jim. Try again.
All right. Is that better?
Yes, sir.
All right, great. Back in the technology world here. I think you're absolutely right that if you look at the two cases, plainly they focus on very different things, and there are different complexities. The New York case, as you just indicated, by Cy Vance and his people, plainly moving ahead. He's been working on this for more than 2 years while the subpoenas have been up and down to the Supreme Court. You mentioned Weisselberg and plainly Michael Cohen coming in and out, and obviously getting now the tax materials, but broad tax-related matters, insurance, inventory, commerce, business, all kinds of things. So the indictment itself there may be very, very thick. The case out of Georgia, a bit more, much more pointed, just because this is, again, by Afani Willis there, the DA, an attempt to try to focus on what exactly was said either by the president and or others to try to undermine that Georgia result. It really is focused upon, again, a particular conversation, maybe some other conversations. The event itself, the prosecution unit, as we sometimes call it, is much more narrow. And for that reason, again, she's issued subpoenas, but that's what a good prosecutor does. She's plainly convened a grand jury there, calling witnesses, perhaps, including the Secretary of State, who was on the receiving end of that phone call, others to confirm things before the grand jury. I would not be surprised if that charge, those charges, issued by the DA through the Georgia Fulton County grand jury come forth fairly soon. I do not believe that we will let 2021 pass without there being also a thick set of charges coming out of this, out of Manhattan DA's office as well. And then we'll have to be on the air for a long, long time, slicing and dicing big piece of document, maybe even larger than the federal criminal code.
Oh, I look forward to that, Jim. In Georgia, the RICO statute, we've heard this talked about in the news quite a bit. Does this offer the DA any specific extra charges or extra powers that she could use? Or is this just simply using the RICO Act and it's just another law to go after criminals?
It's arguably both. It does certainly give you more, as we often say, quivers or arrows in your quiver, so to speak. Obviously, RICO is thought by the public to be sort of a corrupt mob type statute that's often used. It is not exclusive to that. And again, if you what you basically would be alleging is sort of a course of conduct, all sorts of events that have this nexus around attempting to undermine the election, I could envision, based upon what she and the grand jury may see, that you could bring a RICO charge for this kind of organized, purposeful criminal conduct, more than just a one-shot telephone call. That could happen. It depends upon what the evidence shows. You don't want to overreach, but you also want to be specific in describing if, in fact, multiple people are involved in this. Could be conspiracy, as we talked before, could be RICO charges, could be a one-time opportunity by a former president to undermine the election. All those things are possible, as would combinations of those. You can allege substantive individual charges, RICO charges, larger conspiracy allegations in one document. All of that is in front of her and entirely possible, as it is for different reasons, different facts, different bases before Cyrus Vance right now in what he may be working on for later this year.
Well, and you bring me to Cy Vance as well. He announced he will not be running once again for his position. We kind of knew that, but is there any tell from that we can glean from this, knowing that he's not going to be there for the long haul? Jim, I think I heard you say that you expect that we will see some charges brought down this year from Cy Vance.
I think that's right. Again, mostly because this has been going on for 2 years. That's not extraordinary in terms of a white-collar case. We know he's also brought in a specialist, a special company. He's brought in a special prosecutor to look at this. This is not unsophisticated. So the fact it's taken that long period of time is not a reason for me to be critical at all of that, but just that he has been working on this a long period of time. I do think that the fact that he is going to be leaving office also gives him some sense of wanting to conclude this. We will not see the disposition of any of those charges before he leaves, but I think it wouldn't be surprising if Cyrus Vance does announce something, maybe not on the eve of his departure, but sometime prior to his leaving office, as a way of saying, I have now brought this to the next big step. The next DA then takes it to trial, pretrial matters, trial, appellate matters following, and that likely, especially if it involves a former president, will again, like civil cases, probably take months, probably more likely years before it's ultimately disposed of by an appellate courts.
James Santel, our fine guest for a few more minutes. Jim, got to ask you about what's going on in Minneapolis. The Derek Chauvin trial, there was a settlement with the George Floyd family announced before the weekend, $27 million, a lot of jing. And now the attorney for Chauvin, Eric Nelson, is suddenly gravely concerned the news could taint the jury pool. My understanding, 7 jurors are being recalled for questioning. Is that something normal, Jim? Why would you recall the jurors?
Sure, you just want to make certain, again, this is a tough thing to do, right? To find jurors who are impartial and presumably have been asked, can you set aside any information that you've gotten? Can you set that aside and decide only on the case in front of you? That's a difficult thing for human beings to do. And so even though it have been 7 with some good diversity to this point, you want to make certain this latest news, which is very significant, has not tainted their view, their impartiality. And so this is good judge work by the judge who's presiding over this to do that. Going forward, you want to ask the veneer, as they say, if they have been exposed to this. And significantly, I would offer that even during the course of the upcoming criminal trial, it's unlikely, I'm not sure of this, of course, that evidence of that settlement, as significant as we may think it is, will not be permitted to be introduced in the criminal trial of Derek Chauvin and the other 3 in August, just because those are different matters, motions in limine filed. But this is not surprising that this would happen. You want to make certain that you've got an integrity-filled jury, and that none of them has been tainted by the process going forward and even now going back. I'm not surprised by this.
Jim, I can give you a one-word answer. Do you think there will be a change of venue?
I do not. I think the answer is no. I think this judge can do it. There'll be an appellate issue on this. There's no doubt defense attorneys will take this up on appeal, but this is not a true jury of his peers. But I think the judge can accomplish this, especially given what he has done up to this point. He is doing a very good job of crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's.
Thank you to our fine guest, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. If you're listening on AM 950, stick around for Matt McNeil. The rest of you, the Devil's Advocates, happy hour continues right now.
Thanks, Jim.
Special counsel's investigation is ongoing.